your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome in to the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe alongside Dell. Dell, it's been a long time since we've done a show together.
I think it was a July 4th weekend back in, I don't know the year.
Like 2016?
It was a long time ago. I think it was it your idea that prompted that producer show, and it's kind of carried over to ESPN 97.5.
Yeah.
It was back when, was it Yahoo at the time?
Yeah, it was Yahoo. It was, we did a show together for a couple times, and then we did a 15-minute stint on the Paul Gallant show one day, the two of us, like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that was a thing.
But so Dell and I are here with you till 2 o'clock. We got BMAC behind the glass, and obviously, like, there's a lot of stuff to get into. The Astros, Justin Verlander officially makes his return to the Astros today against the Yankees. We had the game last night in which they won pretty handily. The Hall of Fame introductions are today. Training camps going on. College football, depending on your viewpoint, is dead. Some people think it's better. Like, we're gonna get into that, but you know, last night's game, Dell, obviously, Hunter Brown, very good. The lineup was rolling. Probably Dusty Baker, like my favorite lineup that he's put out there. Just it looked logical and not, you know, Mauricio Dubon in center field like today. But last night was a good W for the Astros.
Even when you compliment him, always got the backhanded slap.
You don't like, are you pro Mauricio Dubon in center field?
I'm not. I just know that Dusty, there's generally always a butt with Dusty because he doesn't provide any. Consistency that makes people happy. I mean, there's maybe some consistent mind-numbing decisions, at least in some people's eyes. Yeah, Jake Meyers in center field yesterday made a big catch to kind of keep Hunter Brown on track. The Astros take a 3-0 lead on the Yiner Diaz home run, and then if Jake Meyers doesn't make that play, who knows? It's at least two runs. Maybe it's a inside-the-park home run. Who knows? But it keeps Hunter Brown on track. My favorite part of Hunter Brown is his absolute disgust when he misses a spot. You can see it in his face immediately. Like, some guys are like, oh, okay, let's see what happens. When he flips his head to see where the ball is going, there's an absolute look of disgust because he knows he missed a spot. And it happened a couple times last night on the Jake Meyers catch and also on a home run opposite field that got the Yankees were never really in it. But I'm watching Hunter Brown for his reactions. Like, Jimmy Butler's known as the reaction king in NBA Twitter. If people start to focus on Hunter Brown enough, you're going to get that too.
As long as he doesn't go, who is the pitcher who punched himself in the face for the Astros?
Is it Ken Giles?
Ken Giles.
Yeah, he does the Ken Giles joint.
As long as Hunter Brown doesn't go full Ken Giles and start punching himself in the face when he has a
sadly, family. When you said Astros pitcher who punched something, I had to think because Phil Maton had an incident last year too.
Fact, Phil Maton got so upset that he gave up a hit to his baby brother. He broke his hand.
I'm not a person who's that emotional, but I've been angry. I've never thought to hurt myself. Like, the thought is to hit a wall, throw a pillow, throw a device that could break, but never to inflict damage on myself. It's not part of my function.
No, so like when John and Lance like don't go to commercial break after like the 10th time you told them you're not going to like punch a wall.
No, it's not.
It's not. That's not in your repertoire.
Well, they've beaten down that aspect of me. I'm not going to care. Sure, there'll be some oversight where, hey, Doe, can we keep going? Get them on break, but I think the entire world has come to accept that they're not going to listen to anyone. Mm. So I don't even – it doesn't even rain down on me when they don't do what they're supposed to. People, okay, that's just them. So I don't have to worry about that. But, yeah, hitting yourself, inflicting pain because you screwed up, not part of the deal for me. But, frankly, thankfully that wasn't – there wasn't a lot of that last night as the Astros win 7-3. The Rangers continue to beat up on Scrubs. Although the Marlins are better than you might think, but the Marlins trying to fight to make the playoffs as a wild card. The Rangers take the first one of that series. So, still a game and a half, and we do have Justin Verlander on the mound in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, it's frustrating that the Astros are playing good baseball right now, and they've lost ground in the last, like, week. Like, they're a game and a half back. They've done nothing wrong. Like, yeah, you lost a game to the Yankees, but the Rangers just keep beating up on Scrubs. Like, until the Rangers' schedule gets challenging. I mean, look, they played the White Sox. Like, the White Sox are probably the worst team in baseball now after the deadline. Now they're playing the Marlins. So, yeah, you're right. Like, they're better, but, like, they're not a great team.
They're not good, yeah.
Like, they're not. They're
okay.
They're a wild card team in the National League, which means you're probably below average.
Yeah.
What are your expectations for JV now? Because he's been really good, like the last like 10, 11 starts. He looks like a guy, like he's back in Cy Young form, and you know, him going against the Yankees, a lineup that's like really struggling this season. It'd be nice to see JV just go out there and dominate today.
It would certainly add to what feels like, at least for some people outside the Astros circle, because with us, we've watched him day to day. Well, I'll be a lie if I said I watched him day to day. I just got back into this like two or three weeks ago, so I haven't watched him day to day. But I've seen and heard the talk, the struggles about whether it be injuries with starting pitching, questions about Dusty and his preferred lineups. So we don't necessarily think they're this juggernaut. We certainly hope they can be with the health of Altuve and Yordan Alvarez back. He had a long bomb yesterday as well. But if you throw in a strong performance by Justin Verlander today, immediately after he's acquired, then the whole – we know the Yankees are used to be called the Evil Empire. I think that's kind of transferred to the Astros outside of Houston. If Justin Verlander comes in and throws seven, gives up a run, strikes out eight, a strong dominating performance, that the drumbeat will start about, okay, the Astros are back and no one's touching them again. So I'm hoping he puts fear in everyone. But as far as the rest of the year, I think he'll be JV. I think he'll be a guy who's invigorated by being in a playoff push around people he likes. I think he'll be strong, and I think it's the final piece for another deep run.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, when you look at this team, like health wise, like they got beat up so bad, but now JV comes back. Hunter Brown looking better. Obviously, Fromber just threw that no hitter, and the rotation just seems like it's on the upward trajectory. Like we're gonna get to Christian Javier at 1 o'clock and just what he's been going through, but. Urquidy is officially starting tomorrow, so he's back in the rotation. Obviously, he wasn't great. He had a 5.27 ERA before he got hurt this year. So if he can be just better than he was, I'm still pretty confident the Astros are going to chase down the Rangers. You know, the Rangers are just playing such cake teams at the moment, but you know, it's going to go your way too at some point. You know, after you play the Rangers, you play the Padres, who are playing better. They just lost Joe Musgrove for 3 weeks, so he'll probably be back by that series in September. But then like you play Oakland, Kansas City, Baltimore, Kansas City. Like that's a bulk of your September schedule. So like it what goes around comes around.
The unfortunate thing is I have to watch Greg Kessinger play baseball today.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Dubon and Kessinger, are they back to back in the lineup? That is
they're part of the 7-8-9, yeah.
Yeah, it's Dubon is batting 7th, Kessinger's batting 8th, and Maldonado's batting 9th.
You're giving away three innings in this game.
The way Dubon has hit recently, that is an awful back. That's an awful back third or last third of the lineup. Dusty's like, you know what? After what we did to you guys last night, we're going to give you a chance.
Well, and he put Pena back in the two hole.
Did you mention where Dubon's playing, Joe?
Yeah, he's center field.
Yeah. What did we have last year? The personal center fielder for Justin Verlander?
Why does a pitcher need a personal center fielder?
Great question. Why do they need a personal catcher?
I get that. I don't get a lot of baseball's quirks, but the relationship you have with your catcher, I guess you could say it's the relationship you might have with a producer. I guess if we want to make the correlation between what we're doing
that's
here
fair.
And what they're doing, and some people can't stand their producer, some people love the producer.
That's why Dell's back.
I haven't made any determinations about BMAC yet, so it's we'll find out at the end of the show,
so
I guess.
So who's the John and Lance of Astros starting pitchers who just completely ignores his catcher?
I don't think one of those exists for the Astros.
Yeah. But I would say John and Lance demanded Dell back. Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez demand Martin Maldonado.
Well, Justin Verlander got Dubon in center field, so it's probably Justin Verlander.
Are you the Martin Maldonado of ESPN NYSM?
Well, considering how he hits, that's insulting. So, no. I'm going to say no, I am not that guy. I'm the guy who hit a home run yesterday. I'm Yiner Diaz. I just happened.
Okay.
And I don't think John and Lance like me that much. So they're like Dusty and Yiner. So I think I'm more Yiner Diaz than Maldonado. Just happens to be there. I'm the best of their bad options, I guess. And they brought me back. But I don't know the personal center fielder thing. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
No, it's really bizarre. Like I get why you know, if Fromber's on the mound, you have a guy that gives up a lot of ground balls, you're more likely to play Yordan in left field. Like that makes sense. Mauricio Dubon doesn't have some cannon for an arm that's going to help Justin Verlander out.
And Verlander's been a more fly ball than ground ball pitcher, so you would think you'd want your best offensive line or outfielder lineup on the field.
Exactly. Like it makes no sense why Dusty Baker. Honestly, I'm at this point, I think Dusty Baker's a troll. like, I think I know Dusty Baker listens to sports radio. He won't admit it very often. And I don't know, like, I'm not saying he listens to our station.
Well, we know he reads because Chandler Rome has put out there that he doesn't like Chaz, and he has responded. So yeah. We know he reads.
Now, I guess, I don't know if Dusty knows. I don't know if Dusty listens.
Maybe someone tells him things.
I know that there are members of the Astros PR staff that listen to all three stations, and they report back to Dusty Baker. And
that's someone's job?
That's someone's job. I know that for 110% fact. So, like, part of me is, like, Dusty Baker heard everyone bitching about Justin. The one thing with Justin Verlander coming back is Mauricio Dubon as the personal center fielder, and he goes, ha.
Do you think someone counts the references people make to Dusty and his toothpicks? Like, who, and they report those to Dusty? So, I get a PR staff listening to local media because they kind of want to know what's going on in the narrative, and maybe they need to fight something. At one point, it was mainly a joke about Drayton McClain and his unwillingness to have non-whites on the roster.
Okay.
So as the transition to non-Drayton ownership happened, we saw more Latin American players. I think John and Lance started doing accents to represent what would piss off Drayton as far as his players sounded like. And then the Astros called in and go, hey, guys, could you stop? The guys are trying to perfect their English. And then if they hear it's out there that people are making fun of them, hey, it may not be something they want to deal with. And then, okay, so we know people are listening.
Yeah.
I won't name the person, but the guy who listens to the station, at least listens to that show, is a fan of the show. So he kind of chimed in. I don't know why Dusty needs reports back. Like, that can't be a great thing for you when you're supposed to be blocking out the noise. Like, every day someone's, hey, they called you Papa again. Like, what? Why does he need to hear that?
Because he gets beat up on relentlessly.
No, I get he wants, but why does he need to hear that people are beating up on him again? He's been doing it for an eternity.
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't need it, but some people just, they want to know what the people are saying.
So if someone comes out and is all being fake in their face and asks them a question, you go, okay, I know about you.
I love the way he snapped at Chandler. I like Chandler a lot. I think he's a great reporter. I like his attitude, and I like that he brings something a little bit different to the beat than a lot of the other guys. When Dusty Baker called him out for that Chaz McCormick thing was one of the funniest things I've ever heard, because I know how much it just annoyed Chandler. Like, he was visibly, like, stoic, because that's just all he is at all times. But I know on the inside, like, Chandler was livid when that happened.
There is something about thinking you're speaking into not a void, because you know you have readership and listeners, but you say things and you don't ever consider them getting back to the person you're talking about. And then when it confronts you in front of your, not in front, in your workplace, his workplace is with the Astros, and in front of your immediate fellow media members and the Astros PR staff, there's got to be a blood draining from your face. And maybe a little puckering up at that point when Dusty Baker goes, I know what you said, and it's not true.
That's very true. All right, he's Dell. I am Joe. It's the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Texans training camp is well underway. C.J. Stroud took all the snaps yesterday with the first team. Doesn't really matter, but it does kind of feel like we have a real quarterback competition, at least at the moment. We hit in that next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here, your family.
Brother never told you never threaten a man's family.
Look at our family now.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe and Dell here with you until 2 o'clock. BMAC behind the glass. So Texans training camp underway. C.J. Stroud took all the snaps with the ones yesterday. And, you know, Dell, it seems like they've been going back and forth and can't really, you know, no one's leading the competition to this point, it seems. But this all kind of feels like a giant waste of time. But I'm not sure if it's more of a waste of time for, like, not developing C.J. Stroud correctly, or if the Texans are just fooling themselves into doing this.
It's a waste of time, because if Davis Mills is playing, he's a progress stopper. The only reason C.J. Stroud should not play if he's completely unready, like he can't get plays out, it's a disaster. When he takes a snap, he doesn't know where the ball is going. But he's a young player, and there are going to be struggles, and I don't care how farther along Davis Mills is. He should not play, at least not in at least not in the regular season. If you want to fool yourself into saying we're going to showcase Davis Mills in the preseason as if the rest of the NFL doesn't have game film from the regular season on him, go ahead. You want to give him starts and snaps, that's fine with me. But when it comes down to week one, if Davis Mills is starting, it almost feels like you set yourself back because he won't play the whole year, at least weeks. I can't figure out a real reason why CJ Stroud shouldn't play unless he's completely unready, which means you might have misevaluated your quarterback.
Yeah, because like the only situation, like there's two that I would reference as like of big time red flags or mistakes would be Jacksonville, where they did this. They, you know, Urban Meyer went through an entire offseason where they went through preseason games, all of training camp, joint practices, and they split time with Gardner Minshew and Trevor Lawrence. All in all, for Trevor Lawrence just to be the only guy that like gets the snaps in the regular season. The only thing for C.J. Stroud that like would concern me is really if he can't learn the playbook. And then that reminds me of your team, of what the Dolphins ended up having to do. Where like Fitzpatrick was the starter. They were solid. Then they put Tua in. But then Tua was so not ready, they put Fitzpatrick back in for like a week or two, and then went back to Tua?
Well, the issue with that is Justin Verlander's got some type of issue with his hand after his first strikeout back with the Astros.
Oh, so that would be bad.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, if it's a blister. Who knows what it is? But he's already getting work done after the strikeout. So, as they say, Joe, an inauspicious start to Justin Verlander returning to the Houston Astros. We'll see how that plays out. It looks like he's going to stay in the game. Got maybe that some glue, I'm not sure what it is, or some clear skin, whatever it might be. We'll see how long he stays in as he's blowing on his hand. So a pitch, one batter in, and we're already having issues because that's kind of the way this season has gone. And he's going to throw a couple of pitches to see if he can stay in the game. He shakes his head and said he's ready to go. So that's good news. We'll see how it plays out the rest of the way. Tua was one where he was under the regime of a defensive-minded coach who valued wins over development. So if he thought that Ryan Fitzpatrick would be the best option in a game, he would take Tua out. Like, not because Tua was unready, but he thought the reliever would give them a better shot to win the game. And in some cases, it worked. I think in one case, it worked, and in one case, it didn't. So it wasn't about Tua being unready. It was about Brian Flores treating Tua like he was a cornerback.
Yeah.
And going, well, you're having a rough one today, so we're going to pull our young quarterback and throw in a veteran.
Well, I mean, Tua did admit after the season that he didn't know the playbook that well.
Yeah, it was a Chan Gailey playbook who was built around Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Chan Gailey said, I don't even know why they played him because they told me to build an offense for this guy, not this guy. So,
and that's like my one concern with CJ is that if he can't learn the playbook for some reason, and then you have a bigger problem at hand, like you said. Like, if CJ Stroud were not playing, I think that's like the only legitimate reason is that he doesn't know the playbook. He doesn't know where the ball is supposed to go with the alignment of your offensive line, like their assignments, what they're supposed to be doing. That's the only way.
And then I would say build a playbook for your quarterback because we see the rest of the league. You think Zach Taylor's playbook was specific to Joe Burrow until he got there?
Yeah.
You don't think that the Chargers have had issues and now they have a new offensive coordinator, but the Chargers built an offense that would, at least in their eyes, help Justin Herbert. Some people question why they're not using his abilities more because they don't throw the ball down the field very well, maybe because they don't have a lot of speed in that wide receiver core. But offenses are now built around quarterbacks. You don't draft the quarterback high and then say, learn our offense. Like San Francisco does that because they generally don't draft high, and they did draft Trey Lance, and then he lasted a couple weeks and he was out. And then and their offense is like kind of paint by numbers. A lot of quarterbacks can have success. Jimmy Garoppolo has, Brock Purdy has. But generally with the high draft quarterbacks, you build an offense around them. So if that's the case, find what CJ Stroud likes and then build it.
And the Kyle Shanahan thing is a great example because that's obviously the offense where it's coming from. It's supposed to be super complicated, but it's also incredibly quarterback friendly. They had Brock Purdy, who he played a lot in college, but he came in and he clearly was able to master the offense. Now, he had 12 weeks of sitting on the bench that C.J. Stroud's not going to have, but C.J. Stroud's going to win this thing. And, you know, I saw Brooks Kabina tweet this yesterday. Last year, there was this weird, obviously very different regime. There was a Monday where Jeff Driscoll was all of a sudden taking the starting snaps for the Texans. And Lovie Smith met with the media. He was being all cranky Lovie and was not willing to admit that Driscoll was going to be the starting quarterback the next week. The next day, because that first practice went well, they officially made the change. I almost kind of wonder, though, if we are at that point already in camp where it's like, we're done wasting our time. Like, please be done. The one that I look for the most is when Miami comes here to town for the joint practice, I would like CJ Stroud to officially be the first quarterback by then.
Yeah, and he's going to face what should be a really good defense. Dallas practice, so who knows what they're running. But you might see more. Miami might throw more at him in practice than they would in a game, because who knows how many players will actually play in that preseason game. But the starters will play quite a bit one-on-ones against ones in the practice. You won't see Jalen Ramsey because he's hurt, but Miami's with Vic Fangio as their DC is expected to be pretty good defensively and maybe great when Ramsey gets back. So if he's the starter there, you'll get a really good test. But I hope it's a thing where we have a definitive answer. We stop this. Oh, Davis Mills is really giving him a battle.
Yeah.
I'm not even suggesting that people are wrong and that Davis Mills, playing better, but it does not matter that Davis Mills is playing better. There have been a number of times where the young quarterback has not been the best option, quote unquote, because of the older player, but you build around him and make it so he's as comfortable as possible. So I'm with you that CJ Stroud, it may be a rude awakening with those joint practices, but he should get every opportunity to get beat up mentally. It won't be physically. No one's going to touch him until he gets better.
I mean, frankly, going against Vic Fangio for a week is probably like the biggest learning curve you could have as an NFL quarterback. Like, if any defensive coordinator is going to walk through the door, Vic Fangio is probably the one you don't want to see. Like, 80% of NFL defenses are now modeled after what he did. Like, if you think back to, you know, the year it was the Chiefs and the Rams played in the Super Bowl. The Rams were one of the best teams in the NFL. Their offense was incredible. They played Fangio and the Bears on, I think it was a Sunday Night Football. They scored like 10 points, and the Rams' offense was not good the rest of the year, basically, because like they just couldn't move the ball. That was the Goff Rams, not the Stafford Rams. So like, you look at like what he's done to other, you know, quarterbacks. He's going to find a way to expose their weaknesses. And, you know, honestly, like, I'm kind of good if CJ sucks for the most part. It just, you need to see like flashes of him being good and great. Asking CJ Stroud to come in and lead this team to 10 or 11 wins is such a joke, because there's no chance it's happening. Like,
they're not good enough around him.
I think like they could get to 7 because their schedule sucks, but it's not going to be easy to get there with where they're at.
Yeah. The Texans have not done the thing that these teams with younger quarterbacks have done, and that's partly because of where they are in their rebuild. Like, T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd were already there when Joe Burrow got there, and then they drafted Ja'Marr Chase. There is no real equivalent here where you can say, okay, these are two legitimate, at least 2/3s as wide receivers. You hope Nico Collins can be a 2, as Justin Verlander's about to walk his 3rd straight batter. So after getting an initial out after the questions about his hand, now we're on the verge of walking 3 in a row, which may mean that hand is a little bit more beat up than he would let on since he wouldn't stay in the game. So, once again, not great. We'll see if he can close out this inning. But, yeah, there's not a lot of help, but you have to hope for C.J. Stroud that whether it be Mechie or Tank Dell, those guys grow with him and he can find some comfort. And, obviously, Dalton Schultz will be the tight end. So, there's some things that can help his cause, but if they're growing pain, so be it.
Like, the wide receiver room is solid. It's not great. I think the best talent in there is Mechie, in my opinion. Look, they got him in the 2nd round. I said this yesterday with Joel and Jeremy. Do you think he would have gone in the 1st round if he doesn't tear his ACL? He tore it in December of 2021, and then, you know, the draft is 4 months later. He goes in the 2nd round. Like, I viewed Mechie as a 1st rounder out of Alabama.
He was remember, Jalen Waddle got hurt, and John Mechie became... Jalen Waddle got hurt the Devontae Smith year, I think. But John Mechie came after. Yeah, John Mechie was after Jalen Waddle. But John Mechie, when Jalen Waddle got hurt, became a big part of that Alabama offense. And then he obviously continued that. I agree. He's probably a low first, high second round pick as far as the talent. And so there's a chance there. We just have to hope that when you come back from the illness he came back from,
yeah,
it doesn't change you completely, and that's going to be something he's going to have to build back towards.
Yeah, I mean, like ACL, leukemia, he's been out for 2 years, basically. Yeah. I mean, that ACL injury was December 4th, 2019. 2021. He hasn't played a game of football since. Like, what he's going to look like is fascinating. And then, honestly, it's funny you mentioned T. Higgins, because that's the guy that they need to pay this offseason. T. Higgins should be a Texan in 2024. That's, like, the one thing that I'm, like, looking way too far into the future. Like, that's a must.
It's interesting if Casario's still around, if there's a change at the top, will the, how the Texans will value the wide receiver position. They've put a lot, I won't say a lot, they haven't used a first rounder, but they've used draft assets to bolster that room. Will they now throw big money at it to go find a number one? Because T. Higgins hasn't been a real number one. He's been good, but you have Jamar Chase as the number one. T. Higgins is a really good player. Will they pay him number one money? Because that's what he's going to want.
All right. Yesterday, the last couple days, the last week has been chaos. College football has been a disaster of realignment for the last, like, 2 years. But this week, it went absolutely bananas with the Big 12 essentially eating the Pac-12 and the Big 10 as well. We hit on that next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on FM radio. AM is stupid.
Emotional damage.
610, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the Bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
Joe and Dell here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You guys can get in here at 713-780-3776 on the text line. Justin Verlander's pleading. I think he's going to be okay, though. He should be out here in a second as the Astros lineup is.
Are we going to have a bloody sock moment?
A bloody finger?
Bloody finger.
Matt Young from the Chronicle just tweeted out a story that he wrote last year about how it happened in his final regular season with game with the Astros as well. Like the same knuckle, it looks like. Why does he got bloody knuckles all the time?
I don't know. Maybe he's like...
Did you ever play that game as a kid?
Yeah, of course.
I didn't. That's a...
Is that a white person thing?
It's a white person thing.
You never play bloody knuckles?
No.
Why not?
He just told you it's a white person thing.
White person thing.
You ever had friends that did it?
White friends.
White
friends
that weren't white?
No.
I was not an avid player of bloody knuckles.
No, I didn't play it
maybe
every day.
Maybe the dumbest thing a few people times. Do. Like, of all the dumb things you can do as a kid, that's got to be pretty high up there.
It's definitely high up there.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about being a kid is, well, you're playing baseball, but you're playing with a tennis ball, so it's okay to get someone out by throwing it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you guys play, do you guys play wall ball?
Maybe it had a different name. What's wall ball to you?
Like when, like you, someone has to run and tag the wall.
Oh, and then if they don't get there in time, you get to peg them,
you
right?
Get to peg them.
Yeah. 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 We've done that.
Yeah.
I did that.
Did you play pegs? Where you can throw it at them as hard as you can?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we called it that, but yeah, I mean, everyone plays that. It's usually with a kickball or something.
Yeah. We would play with a tennis ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played with a racquetball.
I didn't play
with that. That's dangerous.
I didn't play with a racquetball.
That B-Mac, that feels like very dangerous.
Yes.
Like you're throwing a racquetball.
I didn't say we made good decisions. I'm just telling you what we did.
I just remember back at my cousin's, they had a big dirt backyard. It wasn't really their backyard. It was a couple backyards together, but there's no fence in between them. And we played baseball. We had, because my aunt played softball, so we had a softball bat, and it was an out if you hit someone, no matter what. Like if they hit a double, but if they're rounding third and they're rounding second, you hit them in the ribs, he's out.
It's a great game. That's a great idea. That's how baseball should really be played. Throwing baseball.
Speaking of feats of a strength or a physical ability, B-Mac came in here. We'll get to conference realignment. B-Mac came in here and said, are we going to be – he asked me if I was going to be part of the producer's fantasy football
league. Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I don't really play, but sure. And, you know, I'm back, and I'm trying to say, hey, I'm a part of the community.
Dell's a team player.
Because normally I'd say, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Right to his face.
Yeah, no, don't count Dell in for next year.
Yeah.
This is – new Dell only lasts so long.
Dell, if you don't want to be it, there's no peer pressure here.
I'll do it because there's not a lot of work to be done. You pick your team, and then you either – S-talk someone or ignore them, depending on how the game went. So he comes in. I'm like, sure. And then Joe says, I'm going to have the last – he said, Joe says, I'm the last pick. I don't care. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, oh, they want to do a combine.
Yeah.
I was like, a combine?
Yeah,
for
we're
what?
Doing a, we're doing a combine. We're doing a it's a best promo.
There's four different feats, and we should put this out there. This is from the mind of Charles. This was not something that I created.
Yeah, I also it was not like you, Del. I was invited into the league, and then so what I've realized is that there's two separate group chats that are going on. There's a group chat with everyone, and then there's a group chat where like all these decisions are being made.
Okay.
And I'm not in the one where all the decisions
are
being
made. So
you're
not in the circle of trust.
Apparently
not.
No,
there's no separate group chat, Joe.
Oh, they're just like...
Or if there is, I'm not in on it.
Yeah, because so, like no one...
I think this is 100% Charles.
Because like I never agreed to do a combine.
The only side conversation that I know of is Andrew Carlson's been pushing to get more and more physical challenges a part of this because he knows he can dominate.
Well, he's a guy who's really into fitness, so he's trying to exert something he's good at over everybody else.
If that's the case, I can level the playing field. Just do it August 29th.
What's August 29th?
Andrew's having a medical procedure like the day before. So okay.
Are you supposed to be telling him? Are you breaking a HIPAA law right now?
No, because I didn't say what it was.
And he's not a doctor.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor. I know Dusty Baker thinks that's what HIPAA is, but we can take advantage of Andrew. But yeah, we're apparently going to do a race up the stairs from the second floor to the fourth floor. We are going to do who can make the best podcast or promo. Who can make the best promo. Who can edit an hour-long podcast the fastest? And then there's some other thing that like was
it also
the most,
involves
why
running.
Why are they offering? Isn't fantasy football supposed to be this fun off-work thing? Why are they offering work as a challenge to
get the draft pick?
It's the draft order.
Then I will act like I'm the Denver Nuggets. I will act like the Denver Nuggets with the best record in the league and just take the last pick because I'm not doing any of that.
I just say, can we just run like if we're gonna do something? Can we run like a 20-yard dash? I don't want 40 yards.
I don't want to do podcast work to get a draft
pick.
That's
what I'm saying. I'm like, this is like not anything that I want to
that
do.
That sounds like the punishment you get after you're the last place guy in the league.
Oh, you want to hear the best part of the league, though?
Oh, there's that, too.
The best part of the league is that it costs money to enter, but the winner is required to then use some of that money to buy all the producer's pizza.
I'm out.
It is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I'm not playing, then. Why do I win? I got to pay to get in, and then if I win, I got to buy you food because you're worse than me?
Yes.
That's who came up with that rule?
Great
Charles,
question.
Again, it's all – okay. Yeah. See, Charles.
We're going to kick Commissioner Charles out of the commissioner role.
Because I'm not – look, punishments, I'm not doing punishments. I'm not showing up at a Waffle House for 24 hours if I was last place. I'm not doing any of that. I was just going to be like, you know what? Sure, I'll be the last person in the league and maybe care week to week. Any of the extra stuff, forget about it, Charles.
We have
you can't punish me if I trained you here. That's my rule.
That's fair.
If I had you in there helping you run the board and trained you, you can't. If you're my intern, you can't punish me.
Yeah, I think we're gonna do our NFL picks on the Killer Bees. The loser. What I want to do is I want to make the loser have to watch the Nickelodeon Super Bowl broadcast. That I think is gonna be, and they have to do like a full report the next day. So they can't watch the real.
The punishment is just watch the Super Bowl?
The Nickelodeon one.
It's still the Super Bowl.
But with the sound on?
But you have to realize who you're dealing with. It would infuriate someone.
Okay, now Joel.
Specifically.
Yeah, Jeremy, I think, would handle that. Joel would not.
You think Jeremy's going to be like,
I think
up
he'd
for,
be
like,
bothered
seeing.
Too.
I think he would, but not
I don't
to the
do
level
it.
That Joel would.
I don't want to watch like a 10-year-old and Keenan and Kel call the Super Bowl.
I think it would bother anyone who cares quite a bit about the NFL. I think there are levels, and Joel would be bothered more.
Yeah. Of course. Apparently the Twitch is dead and not working. This is not a BMAC thing. So people are saying they can't.
Streaming on my side.
Yeah, the people said they can't comment. So, Ocho, thank you for texting in. We got a text here about Justin Verlander's velocity. Looks like he's throwing batting practice from Ocho. Yeah, it's not great.
It's one. I don't know why I need to give updates because you can just watch and listen. But it's 1-0 Astros. He's given up. He walked the guy and then gave up a double. And then on a sack fly to lead to a run. So the Astros are down 1-0. Actually, it wasn't a walk. It was a leadoff single. But Astros down 1-0, man on third, one out. We'll see if Justin Verlander can limit it to one run. Conference realignment.
Yes.
Now that my personal grievances have been aired about the combine attached to fantasy football, if you didn't hear it last night, the Big Ten is taking Washington and Oregon.
Yep.
The four corner schools will be with the Big 12. So West Coast football... I mean, a lot of us in this area didn't particularly pay attention anyway, but now it's officially dead. Like, college football has been a national sport and certainly trending that way really since they started saying we want a 1-2. Because before then, the Pac-12 champion was just playing the Rose Bowl versus the Big Ten champion. I mean, sure, we had the bowl coalition, but for the most part, you're getting a Big Ten Pac-12 Rose Bowl with the best teams playing. since college football has decided we really want to determine a national champion, whether it be with computers or the playoff, it's become a more national sport. Regionality has kind of left it as far as we talk about the West Coast. And now the remaining four Pac-12 schools are Washington State, Oregon State, Cal, and Stanford. Four schools that no one cares about. So the question is, I mean, good, bad, and different. I guess I'll ask both of you. I know where I stand. I'll offer my opinion afterwards. How do you feel about this recent development?
It depends on which conference I think you're talking about. Like, I like the new Big 12. I like Colorado, Arizona State, Utah joining the Big 12. You know, adding those schools plus Houston, BYU, Cincinnati, and UCF after losing Texas and Oklahoma, like what they've done to salvage the Big 12, I think is actually really impressive. And I know we focus on football. That's what they are now, what we look at the SEC in football. That's what they are in basketball. I mean, Kansas, Baylor, Houston, Arizona, like a majority of the best conferences of basketball schools are in the Big 12. So I really like where they're going.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I get why people are mad. You know, it gets rid of some of the rivalries. It gets some of the, obviously people get upset about, it's not, you know, a regional thing anymore. You don't have conferences grouped in a group of states that makes sense anymore. But I don't know. I just want to turn on the TV and see an interesting matchup. And as these realignments happen, you get more good teams consolidated into fewer major conferences. I think that improves the TV product on the field, so I'm all for it.
So here, there's one thing that bothers me with what you just said, and it has nothing to do with you, B-Mac, because this is what people always say. They always talk about rivalries, and they have to go away. And they're wrong. Because in 2024, the University of Oklahoma is going to play their first game of the season against the Temple Owls. They're going to play their second game of the season against the Tulane Green Wave. There is zero reason why they're not playing Oklahoma State. There is zero reason why Texas and Texas A&M haven't been playing. Like, all these, like, rivalries that could still exist, we could have all the conference realignment, and those rivalries, like, could still be in place, and there's just absolutely no reason for them not to be. Now, with the Big Ten...
Well, the problem, though, is depending on the conference schedule they're going to, if they're playing, like, a 9-game conference schedule, they're not going to take, you know, one of their easy layups away and give that. I know. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that's the reality of it. They're already playing, in theory, 9 tough conference games. 100%. They're not going to add Oklahoma State on top of that.
Well, they're not playing 9 tough conference games.
There's always
some soft touch on the schedule. I think it's more about, forget about the schedule. They can talk about that all they want. This is a bitterness you left us deal. Like,
100%. Well, that's what it was with A&M and Texas.
We're not going to play you because this and this, and we don't really need you, so you said this, you left us, we're not going to play. That's all this is. Like you said, there's no reason, because Florida plays Florida State every year.
Exactly.
They're not in the same conference.
South Carolina and Clemson
You're going to tell me that the Oklahoma schedule is going to be, well, now that they're in the SEC, the Oklahoma schedule is not any tougher than the Florida schedule, and Florida finds a way to play their conference or their in-state rival every year. Florida State, when they weren't in the same conference with Miami, played them every year, too.
Yeah, so Clemson plays South Carolina every year.
It's a matter of a willingness to do it and what it means to to the administrator. Because I think the fans will talk about how, we don't need them, we don't want to play them, but they still want to. They won't want to play them. It's about the administrator saying, this is important, we should still do it. And it's one of the reasons the rivalries will go away, is because the administrators have decided, whether through bitterness or delusion, that those games shouldn't be played.
All right, here's Dell. I am Joe. We hit on the Big 12 there. We'll hit on the Big 10. What does it mean for college football next? What does it mean for the college football playoff? That's the expansion is coming after Houston will hold the last Final Four college football playoff championship this coming year. And then at that point, we go to the 12-team playoff. What does all that mean? Plus, I root for Notre Dame. Dell roots for Miami. And a lot of people are talking about our schools and what happens to them next. We'll do that next year as well in the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. I don't get it.
You never know what you're going to get.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
In things that should never surprise you, Jose Altuve owns New York and just went deep against the Yankees. He is just... That's why they are the evil empire now, I think. I think you're right, Dell. Like, people boo the Astros because they cheated, but they also boo them mostly now because they kick everyone's ass.
Yeah. At some point, you get tired of it all. There's always this cycle. The Astros in 2015 and in 2017, before everyone found out, they're this lovable new kids on the block because they had the 100 lost seasons in a row.
Yep.
There was a blip in 16, mostly because they couldn't beat the Rangers. Like, if you think back to that year, the Astros had a better record against the rest of the league than the Rangers did. They just could never beat the Rangers, and it cost them the division in a playoff spot. But since 2017, you win. Everyone's like, oh, look at this. Altuve and Springer and Correa, we love these guys. And then 18 came around, you lose to the Red Sox. And 19, you're back in the World Series. And then the news breaks. And then they go from being this new powerhouse that people like to a team that cheats and we hate them. And anything they do, we're going to find negative. And even as the cheating has kind of dissipated and they proved it, I guess, to people that they can win without it when they won last year, now it's just, oh, it's the Astros again. They're always around.
Yep.
They're smarter than everyone. They'll lose free agents, and it doesn't matter. Think about the attrition for them. Then we'll get to the Big Ten stuff.
JP France is like he replaced Justin Verlander.
And you have
Verlander's back.
Yeah, Garrett Cole leaves. You find Fromber and Christian Javier and Urquidy. Urquidy saved this. They didn't go on to win the World Series. They lose the first two games against the Nationals. He comes in game three, this little known pitcher, and is good and changes that series around. And we know what happens when you don't bring in Garrett Cole to close it out.
Yeah, like you lose Carlos Correa, and Jeremy Peña wins ALCS and World Series MVP the next season.
Springer goes, you don't, like, actually replace him with a great player. You figure out center field, but Kyle Tucker becomes, not a center fielder, but Kyle Tucker becomes your star in the outfield. And obviously, Yordan, that trade, the Josh Fields trade, you win that trade. So all these things have extended the Astros' run, and a lot of it, you could say, somewhat unexpected because we talk about the minor league system not being great. Yeah. But like Urquidy and Fromber and Javier weren't these prime prospects.
Well, like, it's so interesting because, like, Javier was in – he had never pitched above AA. And then during the pandemic when that season started, obviously Verlander pitches one game and then he's out for the year. But, like, the injuries, kind of what happens this year happened during the pandemic season. They just kept calling these guys up and, like, they just kept performing. It was incredible. And they were guys who were not on your radar at all. And that was also career number 200 for Jose Altuve. So we talked about the Big 12. So do you like the Big 12 now as constructed with the new teams?
I don't mind it mostly because Arizona and Arizona State will still be together.
They were a package deal reportedly. If it wasn't both of them.
It wasn't going to be allowed. Just the state wasn't going to allow it to happen. But I'm a West Coast kid. I grew up on the West Coast. So I grew up in a time, I watched college football in a time as a kid where unless you had pay-per-view or cable, you were only going to get your Pac-12 game. So I grew up watching all those games. So it's kind of sad for me because those games, I'm not a traditionalist, but those games won't be happening anymore. But I'm glad those two are together. I'm glad BYU is with Utah because the Holy Wars.
Yeah, that's cool that that's back.
Is a game that can happen every year now. We'll see how they break up the league as far as pods or divisions. And I don't care so much about Colorado, but I do like the Big 12 as it's constituted. You're going to have good basketball. You hope with Utah, people an underrated, maybe not a power per se, but they've been really good in the Pac-12 the last five years.
They might be the favorite to win the Pac-12 this year if it's not USC.
Yeah, I mean, they're there in Oregon, should be pretty good too. So the Pac-12 in its final year will have three teams who think they have, if not a playoff shot,
certainly have
big aspirations. So it might be the best Pac-12 year in a while.
And it's going to be
the last
year.
One.
Yeah. And then the Big Ten is obviously the one that's a little bit more crazy. You know, I don't even know how many years ago it was now, but, you know, they added, obviously, Rutgers in Maryland. They added Nebraska. But now they've gone west. You have USC, UCLA. They are the same as Arizona State. Their board of regents were run by the same people, so they were tied to one conference. So those guys joined with the intention of starting in 2024. But now the Big Ten goes out and gets Oregon and Washington. I was surprised that they got Oregon. I always thought Oregon would likely represent the SEC if there was going to be a shakeup in the Pac-12. But it's bizarre that you're going to have games in which, like, UCLA is going to play Rutgers now at some point. Like, it's just how they're going to align the Big Ten. I know in the Big 12 you have West Virginia, who's out there on the East Coast, and you have Virginia. Like, you have those schools. But the Big Ten makes absolutely...
Sorry, I'm just reacting to
personal
Stanton.
Personal center fielder Mauricio Dubon.
Did he just make a big play?
He just threw out Stanton at the plate.
He got to a ball so quickly that the ball was cut off and by, I don't know who it was, in the middle of the infield and still tossed to Maldonado. You'll watch it here. Dubon gets to a ball that we thought would score a run.
No, that was directly to Maldi.
Okay, I thought Verlander may have cut it off, or whoever that was may have cut it off. But it bounced, and Stanton...
Stanton, I don't think, was running full speed. I don't think he believed Dubon could get it.
That could be full speed for him.
He's been banged up. I don't think he thought Dubon would get to that ball the way he did, and it wasn't even a close play. It wasn't even a really good throw. It's just that he got there so quickly that it resulted in out. So just Verlander, with his personal center fielder, avoids...
Dusty was right.
All Dusty needed.
Dusty was right. Dusty. Like, now you can't question Dusty Baker ever again.
He says...
Like, Dusty was right.
Dusty says, I won a World Series. I have 2,000 plus wins. Respect me.
Yeah, Steve Barber's not out there to ruin my life. So.
Yeah, that's true. That Marlins series. But back to the Big 12, the Big Ten. Yeah, Rutgers may play UCLA. You mentioned Oregon and the SEC. I could never see it happening because there's just a culture clash there that I don't think
they're definitely
that the Pacific Northwest would want to deal with. All the things that go into
being
an SEC football team.
You don't think Oregon, Seattle area, it like fits in Georgia.
You don't think Oregon wants to go play in Mississippi and hear the cowbells?
Yeah,
I don't think the football team would mind so much. I just don't think
it's the people.
The people running that school or the people who root for that school want to be associated with the SEC.
You don't think Phil Knight wants to have to go play in Alabama?
I don't care about Phil Knight sponsors Nike schools. He wouldn't mind it. I just don't think the people and their sensibilities would fit. They're like, we're not them. We're not those people.
Yeah, we're
is what
not.
They would say.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're 100% right. Like, that does make a lot of sense. That like they would say they're better than the South. Like I think people from Oregon and Washington would absolutely go on the record.
There's a politics thing involved. There's so many culture clashes that I don't see. Even we remove the way they approach athletics. Now Oregon cares about their sports. I just think they believe they do it in a different way than what's done down South. The politics involved would say, no, we don't want to be associated with those people. The Big Ten, I think they feel like, oh, that's a place where education means something and all the things.
Yeah.
They would say, okay, we fit in more with them than we would the SEC.
So the Big Ten's at 18 schools. The Big 12 is now at 16. So first things first, we got to change some names here, okay? Like, I don't care what
you guys... ever will? I mean, Big Ten's been more than 10 teams for more than a decade.
I know, but like, you've almost got 20 teams now. I don't want them to call it the Big 18. But
no,
like,
just get rid of big whatever. There's no reason to have a number of it.
Yeah, just change the – I think they got to change the branding. I know it's a small thing.
I like them, too. I just don't think they
are.
I don't think they will either.
I think they would try to find – because, they incorporated the number of teams. At one point, there was like a one inside the I to incorporate –
they added Nebraska.
Adding more teams. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think they're going to get away from big. I just don't know what they call it.
Yeah.
Maybe they just shorten it and just call it big.
The big conference.
I mean, it doesn't really – roll off the tongue.
No, I don't know. I think Big Ten might just be better if they just instead of we're the big boys.
Yeah, I don't know what they call it. That one's going to be tough if they try. They may just keep it the Big Ten and say it just incorporates. They may say 10 means our core values.
Yeah.
What they'll call it.
Oh, I'm sure. The legend. Remember when they were the legends
versus
and leaders?
That's lame enough for the Big Ten that they would definitely do that.
Yeah. I think what's going to be interesting, I think, with the Big Ten is kind of what just the – and the Big 12, too, is how they – break down and apart their schedules and divisions and just like what college football is actually going to look like, because they're going to try to limit UCLA, USC from playing Rutgers and Maryland.
Yeah, it doesn't appeal. Who does it appeal to for those games to happen?
Outside
of basketball, UCLA versus Maryland basketball would be cool, but as far as football is concerned, who cares?
Yeah, like they're going to want mostly the, Penn State versus USC, Penn State versus Washington, Illinois doesn't matter, Northwestern doesn't matter. It's about the big, sexy matchups that you get.
Ohio State versus those West Coast schools.
Exactly. Ohio State versus Oregon on a regular basis. Like,
well, if you make
sign me up.
If you make divisions, you'd presume the four West Coast teams would be in their own division, play them, and then you play one other division from across the country.
Yeah,
your schedule.
People have talked about, the Big Ten could do pods.
Yeah.
Like four pods of 4-4 and then 5-5. And like your West Coast pod will be that one. I read that there has been some talks that the Big Ten might explore doing a Big Ten Final Four to get to their championship. So the winner of each
add
pod,
another game to the schedule.
So like potentially removing one of the cupcake games.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then like you would have like the winner of the West Coast, the winner of like Iowa, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Illinois, and then all these different pods like would play in a four-team playoff to eventually create your Big Ten champion. I don't know. We'll see. It's there's a lot going on, and we'll keep talking about this realignment stuff because, you know, Dell obviously, well, I'm not gonna say obviously. You still do your college football podcast?
No, I realize after Mario Cristobal sucked the life out of me as far as college football is concerned, talking to myself about college football isn't appealing. Talking to other people is what I enjoy. So I've kind of taken a step back. Before we go, you mentioned my podcast, and that was not – it didn't feature Miami all the time, but I certainly mentioned them. The ACC, what they do with their schedule, they don't have as many teams. This year, they've moved away from divisions, but what they've done, they've made it where you have your three permanent – teams that you play, which I can see the West Coast being, since there's four of them, you guys are going to play each other every year, and then we'll figure out who else. I can see something like that. Like, Illinois should probably, I don't know the rivalries as far as Illinois, but I imagine they, Northwestern.
I guess.
I mean, because they're near
each
other.
If the football program even exists after this offseason.
Yeah, considering what Northwestern's been through.
But speaking of the ACC, Florida State has basically made it clear they don't want nothing to do with it. But Dell's a Miami fan. I'm a Notre Dame fan, which is like kind of in the ACC, but not for football, and then the rest is all ACC. But what do those two? What do those three teams do? What happens to the ACC? We hit on it next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.